He texted loving messages about how he wanted a house, a dog, and a family with her. But then he would flip and start telling her that she had ruined his life and that she was useless. So she didn't know what was going on in his head. And soon, it escalated so much that it would make her scared for her and her son's safety. Welcome or welcome back. I'm Cassie, and this is A Wicked World. The story I have for you today is about a mother who knew that something was not right, and she desperately tried to save her son. But she would be continually ignored and denied help, and because of it, her son would end up dead. This is the story of Grayson Kessler. Grayson Kessler was born on December 6, 2016 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. His mother is Allie Kessler, who was 39 when she became pregnant with Grayson, and his father was named John Stacy, who was 47 years old when Grayson was born. Now, Grayson was the happiest little boy with a big imagination, and he was also funny and fearless. He was actually so happy and giggly, in fact, that he was lovingly nicknamed Giggs. The little boy was everyone's best friend and made everyone laugh. Grayson also loved singing, dancing, water slides, Daniel Tiger, the color green, macaroni and cheese, and butterflies. Grayson's mother, Allie, had met his father, John Stacy, through a dating app in 2015 when they both lived in New York. They had a relatively short relationship, and soon after, Allie would move to Fort Lauderdale, Florida for her job. It's then that Allie would find out that she was pregnant. Since she and John were no longer together and living in two different states, hundreds of miles apart, Allie decided that she would raise the baby on her own. So she told John that he could walk away, no strings attached. And John would agree to this, saying that he didn't want anything to do with the pregnancy. In fact, John would tell Allie that she was actually ruining his life by keeping the baby. John would also start texting her and telling her what an awful person she was and that this was no way to raise a baby, meaning as a single mom. She told him that she would do everything and he could walk away, no strings attached, and he's still pestering her. Then in December of 2016, Allie would give birth to Grayson Martin Kessler, and she did not include John's name on the birth certificate, since they had agreed he would be out of her and the baby's lives. For the first 6 months of Grayson's life, Allie wouldn't hear from John anymore. But the relief she felt wouldn't last very long. Around the time that Grayson turned 6 months old, John would suddenly move from New York to Florida and try to get 50% custody of the little boy. John would also ask that Grayson's last name be changed to his own. While Allie denied that request, he was allowed to see his son. Roughly every 2 days, Grayson would switch between Allie and John's house. And this is something that Allie would continue to fight for the rest of Grayson's life, because she knew that something was not right in John's head. And the fact that Allie was fighting for full custody of Grayson would make John switch from one extreme to another. He wanted him, Allie, and Grayson to be a family. In one text, he would say, "I want a home, I want a yard, I want a dog. I won't find anyone better than you, and you have my son." Then he would write in another text message, "You ruined my life, you effing piece of shit." But then John would switch back to wanting Allie again, and he would text her saying, "I know you think I'm crazy, and it's true, crazy about you. Instead of calling me John going forward, you can address me as baby love." Soon, John would start sending Allie up to 60 text messages at a time, nonstop harassing her. Then when Allie began dating a new man, around the time that Grayson turned 4, John would become even more increasingly jealous. And he again began to inundate her with more disturbing text messages. Over and over, John would threaten Allie, send her degrading texts, violate signed agreements, and refuse to pay for Grayson's school or activities. He pretty much would not agree with anything that Allie said at this point. Then on May 14th, 2021, he would text Allie saying that she was not allowed to date anybody else, because apparently he thinks he's her father now, too. John's text would say, "It's either me or no one, or I will remove child support and quintuple the text volume. The choice is yours, Allie." And in another text, he would say to her, "You get what you deserve. You're not even human. You deserve to have your head separated from your body, but I'm not the violent type. God will deal with you." At this point, Allie did not want her son Grayson going with his father. He was clearly mentally unstable. Allie also started texting her lawyer daily with screenshots of John's madness. Allie was under the impression that something would come of this, that John would face some kind of repercussions, but he never did. A few days later, on May 19th, Allie decided to file a protection order to try to keep John away from her and Grayson. Allie told the court that John had been stalking her and that he had become completely fixated on the idea that they should be a couple. He was obsessed with the fantasy idea of all three of them living together and living happily ever after. John had also stalked Allie online. He had been setting up fake social media accounts so that he could stalk her, her family, and her friends. He had also pulled credit reports and background checks on Allie and her family. John had even told Allie that it was his life's mission to make her suffer. She had brought to court with her over 250 pages of documents filled with text messages that contained threats as well as proof of John's erratic and escalating behavior. On the documents that were handed over to the court, Allie even wrote on the front of them in big, bold letters, "I fear for my life, my boyfriend's life, and most of all, my son's life." But the judge would deny the order, saying that there was not enough proof of physical stalking. And that night, May 19th, John would come to pick up Grayson for his court-ordered visitation time, and Allie had no choice but to let him take her son. And if things weren't bad enough, John now began sending text messages and leaving voicemails on Allie's phone, telling her that he knew where she was and what she was doing. And it seemed like John knew that Allie had gone to the courthouse that day, and he was not very happy about it. In a message John sent Allie that day, he said, "Are you trying to get a restraining order because of text messages? That would be devastating to my career, I hope you know. Child support would evaporate and would further fan the flames. If you don't reply, I'll assume that that's a yes." And when she didn't reply back to him, he angrily texted her again, saying, "Anyway, I asked nicely. Suit yourself." Then at 1:21 a.m. on May 20th, John would again text Allie, asking her again if she had been granted the restraining order. Another text message was sent at 3:06 a.m. saying, "Are you taking Grayson away from me?" Then the next day, which was Thursday, May 20th, Allie would bring her car to the Lexus dealership to have her tires rotated. While there, one of the mechanics working on Allie's car asked her if she was aware that there was a tracking device being held onto the bottom of her car by magnets. She was not aware of this. But Allie did have a hunch, since John had recently been telling her that he knew where she had been. As soon as she found this tracker, Allie went down to the police station and filed a report against John. An investigation would be opened the same day. Unfortunately, the case would not be followed up on for another 4 days, though. Now that Allie had discovered the tracking device under her car, John was no longer replying to her text messages, and this was highly unusual, since he was normally constantly bombarding her with text messages. Allie was worried, so she called Grayson's preschool, and they told her that the little boy had not been in that day. At that point, she became frantic. Terrified, Allie called the police 6 times that day to ask them to do a wellness check at John's apartment. The first time, Allie had driven to John's place at the Las Olas by the River condos, and she met the police there. When they knocked on John's door, nobody answered, and they told her that there was nothing else they could do because Grayson was with a parent. She continued calling the police, however, throughout the day, asking them again and again to do wellness checks. Unfortunately, they were never able to get a hold of John or find out where Grayson was that day. Not knowing what else to do, Allie would go to court and file a petition for an emergency pickup of her son. Allie feared that Grayson was in danger. She did not know what John was capable of. Her attorney wrote in the petition that the father was wrongfully detaining the minor child and the mother was justifiably concerned that the minor may be harmed while in his father's care. But this emergency pickup would also be denied. The judge would justify this by saying that the motion did not present an emergency, as it addresses the issue of child visitation. But Allie had no idea where her son or her ex were, and she thought that maybe John had even taken him out of state. And even John's family was telling authorities that they feared he may hurt himself or his son, but the authorities did not budge. So since nobody in the legal system would do anything for Allie, she decided to contact the person who John rented his condo from and ask if she could hire a locksmith to break in. The owner agreed to this, and Allie would receive a text message at 11:50 p.m. that night when the locksmith as well as police had arrived to John's condo. They told her they were about to break into John's condo, and they would give her a call back. So Allie sat there anxiously waiting to hear if they found her son. But it would take over 5 hours to hear back from the police again. And it wouldn't be via phone call or text message. The police would show up at Allie's front door on May 22nd around 5 a.m. They then told her that they had found the bodies of John and her son Grayson in the living room of his condo. John had shot Grayson in the head before turning the gun on himself. Neither one of them had made it. John had been worried that his troubling behavior had led to Allie getting a restraining order. And then he was worried that this would lead to him not seeing his son again. He was also worried that his reputation would be ruined. He did not want to lose Grayson, but he did not want Allie to have him either. Everyone in the legal system had told Allie that there was no probable cause to remove Grayson from his father's care. As she would say, they just all pointed fingers at somebody else. And now it was too late. Allie said prior to that week in May, she never thought that John would do anything to hurt his son. Her, maybe, but never Grayson. But she had suspected that something was not right, and she sought help, but she was continually denied and ignored. Dave Ratterman, an acquaintance whom John would often have coffee with, said that John had left behind his life in New York to be a father to Grayson. He would go on to say he had never seen someone who loved their son so much as John. Well, I guess he's never met another parent then. It's the only explanation for that. To his friends, John had never seemed angry or violent. They described him as friendly and a really nice guy, but he was kind of distant and didn't keep many people close to him. And apparently John had been a member of the Mooney cult at one point. He had been recruited in New York when he was only 18, and at one point, he even took part in a mass marriage ceremony and got wed to a Japanese bride. He had stayed a member of this cult for 5 years, and when he had left, he never received or sought any type of therapy or help for what he had gone through. In a GoFundMe set up for Grayson to help pay for funeral expenses as well as legal fees, the family wrote about their pain of missing the little boy and how the world was now a darker place without him. They also said the police, Child Protective Services, and the criminal justice system failed Grayson and Allie, who filed multiple emergency orders to get Grayson safely away from his father, who had been sending threatening text messages and emails to Allie, exhibiting frightening behavior. If the domestic violence injunction filed by Allie had been approved by the judge, our Grayson would be here today. Allie said about her son Grayson, "I want him to be remembered and honored and to create awareness to what's going on. It's been a nightmare. Every day it's a struggle to wake up. The only thing that keeps me going is to help raise awareness. I don't want his death to be for nothing. Not only did I lose a son, I lost my life. I'm not a mom anymore. My world was 24/7 all about Grayson, making him lunch, taking him places." Since Allie did not want her son's death to be in vain, she worked with Florida lawmakers to pass Grayson's law. In December of 2021, a bill was filed proposing reforming custody court procedures that had previously overlooked evidence of abuse when determining if shared custody was in the best interest of the child. In March of 2022, the bill would be stalled in the Florida State Senate, but it would then be approved in May of 2023, and would officially go into effect as of July 1st, 2023.
This is how Allie Kessler remembers her son Grayson, vibrant, fun-loving, sweet.
And this is Grayson's room.
All she has now are the clothes, books, and toys he left behind.
And this is the last thing that I got from him for Mother's Day, right before he was killed, to make me miserable. And that was the only way that he told me that. That was the only thing that he could do to really, you know, get back at me.
And Allie also started a website, graysonschoice.org, which was created to raise awareness about the risk of family domestic violence in all forms. It's their mission to develop programs, education, and training for all parties involved in family court. Grayson Martin Kessler's funeral was held on May 26, 2021 at Menora Gardens and Funeral Chapels in Southwest Ranches, Florida. And Allie would decide to release butterflies at her son's funeral because of how much the little boy loved them. In May of 2022, a candlelight vigil was held for Grayson at his favorite park, which was Daiku Park in Plantation, Florida. Here, a tree had been planted in memory of Grayson, and a plaque honoring him was also placed in the park. Well, thank you for listening to all of Grayson's story today. This poor mother could not do anything else legally. The saying is, see something, say something. And Allie did. She knew that something was definitely not right with John. For years, actually. But she was ignored over and over again. No one was there to help her or Grayson. It's frustrating and sad. But I'm glad that Allie was such a strong woman and fought until she made changes to the laws that had so badly failed her and her son. So if you do like true crime and you want to hear it from me, then don't forget to hit that subscribe button below and turn on your notifications too, so you'll know when I upload a new video, which is 2 to 3 times every week. Thanks for watching A Wicked World today. Until next time, take care, guys. Bye. Thank you for being patrons of A Wicked World. Adina, Allie, Amy, Angela, Angie, Beatrice, Carrie, Catherine, Danielle D, Danielle H, Drew, Frank, Hanorama, Hannah, Kara, Lori, Linda, Marion, Mary, Mel, Melissa, MJ Kelly, Neoma, Power 31312, Ray, Shayna, Cheyenne, Stephanie, Susan, Suzanne, Tammy B, and Tammy S. You guys rock. Now, there's even more of A Wicked World on Patreon. You'll have access to exclusive videos each month and more. Any support truly helps to make sure the victims never get forgotten and to highlight the shortcomings of society associated with each case. So check it out at patreon.com/awickedworld or use the Patreon app.